Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. We have a worldwide audience. We're in virtually every country of the world. A lot of people of all ages, background, ethnicities, religious beliefs, political beliefs, tune in because something each day will harmonize or connect with giving them perspective and empowering them. That's how we program. Now, we know that health is important to everyone, so I always lead off the show with about 20 minutes or more of health and nutrition, always from quality institutions, independent peer-reviewed literature, followed by the latest on environmental issues, and then on the issues that are not being addressed honestly or at all by the mainstream media. We have a lot of new listeners, and I'd like to thank you all for taking your time. Plus a lot of articles, a lot that I write personally, about 15 to 20 a year, major investigations. The latest on sugar, you can get it. Everything that's wrong with sugar, supported by quality science, is there. In case you need to share that with someone who may still believe that there's nothing wrong with sugar, or fluoride, or mercury fillings, or vaccines, or nuclear power. So we take on these issues, and all I ask you to do is this. Take any of the major issues that have been around for a while, let's say 30 years or more. Look at everything that we in the progressive community have put forth, then compare that to what the orthodox scientific, medical, and media communities have put forth. You will find the following, that virtually in every single case, no exceptions, they were wrong. On everything they advocated, we were right. So common sense and reason suggest, then, why aren't we given any of the confidence to be invited on to forums to share a counterpoint of view? But we're not. No different than while Ralph Nader, Rocky Anderson, or Jill Stein were not invited at different times on to the political debate stage. If they were, you would have seen such a radical difference in how they approach a problem, and it was such reasoning and common sense, you've no longer been supporting either the Democratic or Republican positions in most cases. I'm going to give you some specific examples each day of this week, and I'm going to be sharing commentaries beginning tomorrow that I've written on the state of the world and the state of our consciousness and what I believe is required for us to make positive change. That said, today we're going to talk about health and nutrition. I'm going to go right into it. And then last night on 60 Minutes, they had a piece which was very well produced, very compelling, about the White Helmets who were up for nomination for Nobel Peace Prize and all the suffering of the people in Aleppo. I then decided to go back through the last 2 weeks of all the major stories from all the major networks I could find on how they were covering Aleppo. Not one called it a liberation. No, they called it a punishment. They called it a tax. And it was always as if the enemy was Russia and Syria going into a part of Aleppo, which represented a small part of the larger area, and freeing these people. They made them look like they were dropping barrel bombs, killing them, summarily executing them. And these people would have been much better off if they would have been left in peace. But what if I showed you that it was all lies? Let me be very clear and unequivocal. I challenge the best reporters, the best investigative journalists, and the publisher of the New York Times to come on this program tomorrow and debate me. You will be given the respect you do not show others, because I will not hold you or your position in contempt. I will merely show that everything you promoted is propaganda that has nothing to do with the truth. And that I'll get to a little later today. But we're going to start that process today. The truth about Aleppo, the truth that our major media, including much on Pacifica, has been propaganda and not truth. Also today, a Canadian journalist who cannot be influenced, is not under the control of the CIA, doesn't need to be another darling talking head on the media stations, has gone to Syria multiple times, is recognized as an outstanding peace activist and journalist. She will tell you the truth about what is going on in Syria. And we're going to also look at take another look from a different perspective at Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi. On a personal level, I would never defend Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein. But in the case of Libya, I absolutely defend what he did for his country and how his country ranked number one in longevity, number one in free health care, number one in literacy, even higher than Cuba. And by the way, in my travels to Cuba, I found that no matter how poor people were and they are poor, very intelligent, extremely educated. And the rights of women, more rights for women in Libya than any other Muslim nation in the world. More democracy in Libya than the United States by a measure of 10. We couldn't begin to have the democratic principles that they exercise in Libya. Why is none of this up for discussion in the media at all? Because maybe if you stop demonizing a country before you destroyed it for your own economic or political agenda, showing the power of hegemony, that you might see that, gee whiz, wow, they're doing stuff better than we are. So I'm going to show you other countries we've done this to that you're not even aware of. All that today. As you see, we have a packed show. We always begin with something that can empower people, something that's within your control, and that is the choices in your health. The gut is, as I've said many times, our second brain and our primary immune system. There are over 100 billion neurons that we thought were exclusively in the brain, actually in the gut. They communicate every microsecond with each other. Here's the latest University of Texas Health Science Center. It says, defects in the body's regulatory T cells cause inflammation and autoimmune disease by altering the type of bacteria living in the gut. This, according to research from University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston, discovered. The study, which is resetting microbiota by lactobacillus, inhibits Treg deficiency-induced autoimmunity via adenosine A2 receptors. This is published in the Journal of Experimental Medicine. In lay language, what this means is that when you eat good probiotic foods, if you were to have some sauerkraut or miso soup, if you were to have some yogurt, any food that has a pre or probiotic in it is going to be recolonizing good bacteria. And it's as if the body knows it's getting good bacteria, and it starts a massive communication campaign in the gut that it stimulates a healthier immune system. Now, you cannot have a truth in absence of its opposite. It is not possible. So what you have is one minus or a separation from that truth. So, for example, you don't have absolute cold and absolute hot. You have hot, but then there's an absolute cold that you cannot go below. So cold is merely the absence, to the degree that it once was, of heat. Lies are absence of the once truth. Evil is the absence of one's spiritual. So we like to think of things as completely separate, good and bad, righteous and evil. But there's not evil as an entity. No baby is born evil. These are all conditioning from an absolute. So what do I mean when I say or suggest that you cannot have one good bacteria communicating and cooperating with another good bacteria to build the immune system, then its opposite is the absence of that, meaning you've gone away from the good. And that is every time you eat sugar or drink alcohol or you eat toxic foods or chemicals, that does not help the good bacteria. It actually creates bad bacteria, and the bad bacteria work the same way as the good. They proliferate. And as a result, we end up with candida, we end up with different itises, inflammations in the gut that can spread to the heart, that can spread to the gums. In fact, what's in your gums, cytomegalovirus, can frequently spread to the heart, and you end up dying of heart disease from what was an infection in your gum. But also, it's also true that what you do good for one part of the body helps the whole body. We like to think the body is separate. Well, I'm going to do something just for my heart or just for my stomach. Now, there are certainly nutrients and foods and juices that can help in that. But everything you do good circulates throughout that body about every 6.5 minutes. So about every 6.5 minutes, you're taking everything good through every cell of the body, including the brain, except for what the blood-brain barrier does not allow in. So when you have good bacteria, you have a good immune system. Now think of the tens of millions of Americans that have defective immune systems, probably over half the population. That means that every time you intentionally choose something good, your whole immune system is benefited from it. That's the power of those little tiny microorganisms, those little tiny bacteria. Now, for the people in this audience, especially men suffering from dementia, the University of Eastern Finland found a very interesting study. They found, quote, frequent sauna bathing can reduce the risk of dementia, according to a study carried out at the University of Eastern Finland. This was a 20-year follow-up study, men taking a sauna 4 to 7 times a week were 66% less likely to be diagnosed with dementia than those taking a sauna once a week. The association between sauna bathing and dementia risks has been previously investigated. The effects of the sauna bathing on the risk of Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia were studied at an ischemic heart disease risk factor study, 2,000 middle-aged men, and they lived in Finland, and they took the saunas, and they had a tremendous outcome. Really impacts the aging process, and this was published in Age and Aging Journal. Why? Because a sauna bath is where you have a tub of water, and you put the water over your head, and you don't get the temperature up too high. You're fully hydrated when you're in there. And you frequently will go from the sauna into a cold dip back into the sauna. But your body is really cleansing. A lot of the minerals that are toxic, like nickel, and metals such as cadmium and mercury, come out. In fact, when I've seen people detox using sauna as one part of the detoxification protocol, you'll frequently see, if you take a sample of their swab off their skin, you can find a whole plethora of medications and heavy metals and toxins. Where were they? They were in the fat tissue. The sauna is particularly good at having the fat release its toxins. Now, here's a takeaway message you generally won't hear. The more overweight you are, the higher percentage of your body index mass, which is how much extra fat you have on the body, the slower should be your detoxification. You don't want to release a lot of toxins real quick because it can actually overwhelm the kidneys and the liver. It literally can clog them up. And with cancer patients in particular, with all the detoxification you're doing, you could actually have more dead cancer cells going in then the body can release, and that could cause congestion or failure of those organs. I had someone who came to me one morning and had in a jar this black gelatinous mass and said, "Gary, this is what I passed this morning." And it was cancerous, dead cancer. I understand the body is absolutely a miracle machine when it comes to giving it the right protocol and having it do the right job of expelling toxins. So the measure of a person's health is frequently how much limitation is being caused hormonally, biochemically, mechanically, because the metals you've accumulated in toxins over decades. But saunas get it out, if done right. And I always recommend two drinks. One before you do the sauna, where you take a teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, a teaspoon of lemon juice, in 16 to 20 ounces of cucumber and celery juice, and then afterwards, one 16-ounce glass divided in half, 8 ounces of grapes, 8 ounces of watermelon, following your sauna, with some coconut water while you're in there. So good results from frequent sauna. Men, you could save yourself from dementia. That's according to the study. Also, there's a study on the metabolic benefits of EGCG from green tea. And this is from University of Mie in Japan. And it says, supplements containing G-galate, which is EGCG, from green tea may increase energy expenditure and impact metabolic rates and help with weight management. This meta-analysis. 8 randomized controlled trials indicating that 300 milligrams of EGCG may promote the breakdown of fat and help with weight management. And that's according to this study. Generally, anywhere between 250 to 500 milligrams a day of green tea supplement is fine. From Penn State University, quote, "For the first time in 2 decades, the life expectancy of Americans declined and the overall death rate rose, according to the National Center for Health Statistics." But, quote, it says, "A lot of people are still trying to understand the data and speculate on what the report means based upon the information we have." Well, let me just give you the overview, because it's really simple. Everything in life is either going to be a constructive or destructive choice. There's no neutral. So if you're doing something good, but also something destructive, in the end, the good is merely a delaying until the destructive energy takes hold. By the time you finally realize you've been making the wrong choices, you generally are at a level of heart attack, stroke, cancer, dementia, some other problem. So we're seeing more stress in people over the age of 40, in part because millions of Americans who work nobly and honestly and diligently to work themselves up to some senior position in a company, and were making a good wage, a high quality standard of living, had some savings, their jobs are being taken away by people willing to work for no benefits, half the salary or less, coming from countries such as India and Pakistan, who are highly educated. They may have a PhD, willing to work with no benefits, except maybe $40,000 a year, where you were making $120,000 a year. And the really telling part of this is they're being taught how to do the work by the very people whose jobs they're taking. And that's been going on for some time. And therefore, the people who thought that this is one area that's going to be protected, it isn't. There's also changes in people's life, where one day you wake up, and I just saw this the other day in the elevator coming to work, where someone was really not talking but screaming at their mother about what they weren't going to do, and then stomped off. I'm guessing the person is maybe 16, 17. And the mother just stood there for a moment, and just, you could see in her whole body chemistry, she just felt overwhelmed. And I'm thinking, just remember, my generation, the baby boomers, and the greatest generation, our parents, you didn't act that way. You were taught manners. You can disagree. You could have your own unique personality, but you couldn't curse your mother, as this woman was doing. F you, F you, F you. All this woman was saying. You didn't do that, or you'd find yourself in a pain situation. Today we have a nation of cupcakes. We have a nation where there are certainly exceptions, but you can thank the parents or grandparents for that exception, where people feel that there's no responsibility for what they do. It's not their fault. They're just too perfect. They're angels. They're goddesses, gods. They have to be rewarded. You know, just come to breakfast and we'll have a trophy on the table for you for showing up. If you're never taught to be responsible for your choices, then you can walk away with them. There is simply no sense of empathy for anyone. Someone else is suffering? Too bad. Their problem. You don't look at people as sacred on any level. Everything's objectification, including the whole idea that taking a selfie. Now, I've never taken a selfie. I won't take a selfie. I do not follow cults, crazes by mindless people. I will refuse to do that. So just remember, don't ask to take a selfie with me because it ain't going to happen. And I've never Twittered. I refuse to. There are a lot of things I refuse to do because I just do not believe in what we have become. So one day you wake up and you think, my God, all these little Frankensteins, who created them? Well, doctor, you created the monster. Try starting by taking some responsibility for what you've created now that you cannot longer control it. And imagine what's going to happen in everyone else's life. That person goes into feeling titled, feeling they can do, say whatever they want, come to work when they want, do as little as they want, expect to be moved up very quickly, be bored with everything except pictures of themselves and showing what their dog ate this morning. An entire nation where the vast majority are graduating from college, in my opinion, they're functionally illiterate. If you doubt me, wait till you see the new film that I've been working on, where I've only gone to college campuses. I've only spoken with, forget undergraduates. I get more intellect out of a Cracker Jack box toy, graduate students. And when you hear the simplicity of the question, you think, surely they can answer that. 99% don't, can't, or care less. So exactly how are these people going to help us with the world that we have, and the crisis we have, and the problems we have, and the issues we have? A whole lot of people are counting on that they don't. Did you ever figure that maybe it's not just a side effect of our educational system, our mass merchandising, the commodification of everything, the propagandizing, but as long as you have such an illiterate nation about everything, maybe they'd be a lot easier to take advantage of, to exploit. Anyhow, there's a whole film on this coming out called Where's My Life, Dude? It does have a happy ending, but not because of the people I interviewed. There are people who are conscientious. So just imagine now that you don't think about what goes into parenting, you don't think about what goes into friendship or relationship, you don't think about what goes into quality of work, you don't think about what goes into the media that you're getting, you don't think about any of this, it's not important to you. Until one day, you realize how many of the people you have counted upon, trusted, believed in, have simply been wrong. Whether they were intentionally wrong or wrong by a choice of ignorance, you may never know. But there are countries around the world where they are getting it right. Oh, by the way, one of those countries, just as an example, and this is not a promotion of the country, it's just one of the systems. Norway has so few prisoners that it's had to close over 29 major prisons. Oh, And also in other countries, including Norway, you'll frequently see prisoners out working, socializing, and going back to their jail unaccompanied, having all the tools to learn trades, and they have one of the lowest recidivism rates in the world. But then again, they have a different notion of why someone should go to jail. Our latest study shows that 39% of all prisoners in the United States should not be in jail. Then why haven't you seen the Democrats in the last 8 years? Or the Republicans 8 years before that? Or the Democrats 8 years before that? Or the Republicans 8 years before that? Do anything, nothing, zip, to reexamine how to keep people out of prison, how to truly rehabilitate them if they're in prison, and how to treat them once they've exited prison. And what about their families and people or the helpless victims, even if the person deserves to go to prison, that now have nothing that they can do to help themselves? Other countries have thought deeply on this. We have not thought about this at all. In fact, people pride themselves and get elected by how harsh they're going to be on making sure that if you smoke marijuana, you're going to prison. And that's where we're at. Interesting, since the last three presidents we know of used drugs. And one of them used drugs extensively. You'd be hard put to find another human being in the United States, except maybe a meth addict, who used more cocaine. Oh, by the way, maybe I missed it. The doctor at the hospital who treated this person, but was told, threatened, you ever let this out, your career's destroyed. Well, the doctor spoke, talked about the coke overdoses. But when you're a gifted and golden retriever of the Democrats, you can get away with anything because substance is irrelevant. Context is irrelevant. Content is non-existent. Style is everything. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. All of you, I'm Gary Nall. You can watch our program by going to Ustream channel, looking for Gary Nall. And I might mention, starting in about 4 to 6 weeks from now, you're going to see a whole new progressive radio network. Wow. We have major changes. We have a huge brand new state-of-the-art studio with screens and monitors, going to be streaming all day long, videos, commentaries, and people from around the world. We're going to have a constant Conversations with Remarkable Mind series, The Investigators, whole new series, lots of young people. Another issue that I believe affects a lot of people is the stress of the holidays. If you're a parent, if you have a large family, there are certain family obligations that we're all attended to and do the best we can. But if you're a single person, as we have tens of millions of single people in the United States, the holiday time seems to be one where you just wish it were over. We all know that it's way too commercial. The idea that you're valued only by the quality of a gift that you give someone. And I think that we should take a moment and rethink this. And the University of New Mexico also has an idea about this. Here's what they say. See if you agree with this. While you bake, deck the halls, and try to pick out the perfect gift, there's stressors on your body that may not be so obvious, but are affecting your overall well-being. It may not be coincidence that you get the annual flu or a cold in December, in addition to feeling like your pants were shrunk in the dryer. It should be no surprise that many of the main holiday seasons, including gift-giving, all obligations and expenses off the budget and lack of time and ability to pick out the perfect gift, with so many expectations on top of your usual workload, you're putting your body under pressure to help you get everything done. No matter how organized you are, holiday chores are still completed at a great price. Stress itself doesn't hurt us, but how we respond to it does. It can affect your health temporarily or long term. There are three stages to your body under stress. The alarm stage, consisting of increases in heart rate, blood pressure, and energy needs, in addition to decreased immune system effectiveness. Now, these changes are from the release of hormones prepared by the body. I've talked about this many times, cortisol, for example. Then we have the resistance stage, consisting of adjusting or adaptation to a specific type of stress and the breakdown of related hormones. This process takes time and is the reason your body may feel stressed even after the real or perceived stress no longer is present. And during this phase, there's also an increase in heart rate, oxygen to the muscles, general sleeplessness, and hunger. And the final stage is stress exhaustion. This is when the stressors are so complete and they're not removed, and your body energy level cannot maintain normal energy. It forces us to constantly react and adapt. You might have trouble sleeping. You might be in an irritable or moody state. You might have decreased satisfaction with tasks, persistent feelings of urgency, clammy and sweaty hands, cold hands and feet, tension, headaches, backaches, stomach aches. These are normal. So here's something that's unique, and I really agree with this. How to manage this. And it's all about taking care of yourself, eating healthy, getting rest. That's good, but first you have to ask yourself, so what am I doing that could make a difference? And one of the things you could do differently is give a gift where you can actually be a part of that present. For example, concerts. Get a ticket to a concert for you and a friend or a family member. That's something that you're going to remember long after that event. I can assure you they're going to remember that more than the pair of socks that they'll never wear. And also, look for gifts you can give to multiple people that will benefit them in some way, so that the gift itself, they're going to think about, because it's not just a regular gift. Something you've made, something you've created, a song you've written, a poem you've written, something they can appreciate. Even a wonderful bouquet of flowers that you went to a florist one of the greenhouses and you put it together yourself, so they can put it on a table, and at least for that period of time, it's going to look really nice. Even something I found people like are the potpourris, where you take some wonderful dried flowers, jasmine, lilac, lavender, honeysuckle, chrysanthemums, roses, and you put those into a nice, some form of canister, and you take it to them. People will frequently put it by their night table, because if you have a problem sleeping and you're exposed to lavender, it helps you sleep, the aromatherapy. People put it in the dining room, on the table, in the bathroom. But it's the kind of thing you really appreciate because you're actually using it. And I think that's important. And also, a friend of mine resolved this a long time ago. It's a pretty big family. And instead of everyone, you know, not using the gifts that they're given, he simply buys them gifts of health. He'll go to a health food store and buy him some organic toothpaste or a shampoo, mouthwash. things they're actually going to use and appreciate. So just imagine if your Christmas gift or holiday gift or birthday gift, doesn't matter what time of year, someone gets you a gift, you can actually use it and you appreciate it. You'll never find people complaining if you got them a box of organic, healthy chocolates. Not the ones loaded with artificial flavors and sugars, but healthy, raw cacao. There are at least 100 different brands out there. They're not expensive. And last, and every time they go to take a bite out of that chocolate, they're going to remember you because you thought about them. The things that we can actually use and appreciate that we would have purchased on our own are the types of gifts that last. And if you want to give a great gift, one that will really last, that they'll be talking about years later, get them a gift to a ball game, gift to maybe a vacation if you can afford it. Just the idea that they're going to, you know, go a weekend trip away, go to the mountains, go to the ocean, go to the desert, and enjoy nature. You know, one of these outback exercises where you go out into nature and you enjoy it with friends or family. That's the kind of thing people take photos of, they'll talk about, and now you've made an indelible impression. It's a part of the remarkable moment collection of life. Throughout my life, wherever I could afford it, I would always invite friends or families or people I was having a relationship with to travel. Might be doing a marathon, in which case we trained for a year, and then we'd go out and do the San Francisco Marathon or the Jamaica Marathon. The wonderful places where these are held is what you enjoy. And years later, you're still going to find that they light up a smile the moment they talk about, oh, remember when we were doing the London Marathon and we went out every day and saw the castles and the great estates and the farmland and then went to the theater and it was only $5 to see a play in London where it had been, you know, $100 in America. They don't forget that. I've never forgotten any of the gifts that came from thinking thoughtfully about what I might appreciate. Even getting a book that they wouldn't expect, a book on the philosophers, great philosophers, something other than a novel, something other than the popular press. So that de-stresses us because we know we're not going to get stressed. We're going to be happy. And the father of stress therapy was a man named Dr. Hans Selye. I knew Hans Selye. I was a young, budding scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology, and he was at the end of his life cycle. I was the beginning of mine, but we had a chance to talk. I had him on my early radio shows, and Dr. Lawrence LeShane, in my opinion, one of the greatest minds in American psychotherapy, he was the first to show that it's not stress that kills us. It's distress. And distress often comes by what we cannot control, including people's response to us. And he said, take a moment before you personalize everything and go to neutral and say, I'm doing the best I can to be thoughtful, to be conscious, to be positive towards you. And this gift is coming from me. I just didn't walk into a store and buy something because it was an obligation to give you something. So that concert we went to, that boating tour around Manhattan where we spent, you know, 6 hours going on around the city, sightseeing, something that people who live in Manhattan never do. And they didn't know all these wonderful places existed. They drove right by it. Those mean something. And that is not only de-stressing, but it creates a positive energy, one of excitement, anticipation. How about giving a gift to taking someone over and treating them, it's only $10, $15, to the Museum of Natural History, or to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, or to the Guggenheim, or to the Frick, or to the City of New York. Wonderful places. You can spend hours there, and it gives you something to share conversation. Or what about buying someone tickets to art movies? Every community now has, generally, every major city has at least one, and like New York has like 10, art cinemas where you see films you would not normally see. I think that would be good also, because then you could give a person tickets, they're going to use the tickets, and you could say, let me know which of those movies you know want me to go with you, and I'll go with you. Then you go to a movie, you enjoy the movie, hopefully. Then afterwards, you have a way of, you know, going out and having some dessert at a place and a healthy dessert, and you can talk about that experience. That lasts. So I believe that this is a time of year where we shouldn't be lonely and we shouldn't be stressed and we shouldn't have our hormones, you know, working against us. We shouldn't be having an increased heart rate and sweating and not sleeping at night. This should be a time where we feel good about life and good about the idea that whatever we're giving someone, it came from us. We thought about it, we smiled about it, and we gave it. Now, I want you to hear from a person that actually was in Syria, that has not been compromised, that doesn't belong to the CIA, and she I trust. In fact, I have two independent verifications that everything she's about to tell you is honest. Please listen in to this Canadian journalist.
And something that Sarah Flounders mentioned, which is that today in the General Assembly, the representative of my country, Canada, is raising or has raised a resolution which is not about human rights. It's not about the people of Syria. It's a resolution meant to point fingers and to vilify the governments of Syria and Russia. And this resolution relates to a UN Security Council resolution that was vetoed by Russia and China some days ago. That resolution pertained to another useless ceasefire in Syria, which would have no bearing on, bring no good to the people of Syria, and which follows a week of liberation of areas of Aleppo, which now amounts to about 95% of areas of Aleppo that have been occupied for years by terrorist factions. So at this time, when 100,000 civilians in these areas occupied for years by terrorist factions have been liberated, the UN, parties in the UN wanted to impose another ceasefire. And I want to remind people why these ceasefires are indeed pointless. The last ceasefire in September was from the very start negated by 20 main terrorist factions who declared they were not going to participate, and from the very beginning violated the ceasefire over 300 times during the duration of the ceasefire. And not only these terrorist factions, while the Syrians and while the Russians adhered to the tenets of the ceasefire, but the American-led coalition itself violated the ceasefire by targeting Syrian army positions in Deir ez-Zor, killing at least 83 Syrian soldiers in a prolonged attack that lasted nearly 1 hour and which enabled ISIS to overtake that position. So this is one reason why a ceasefire is pointless at this point in time. There is no faith that any of the parties that the U.S. and Western leaders who have funded these terrorists, there's no faith that they can actually control the terrorists and get them to adhere to a ceasefire. And the people of Aleppo want Aleppo to be completely freed. And I speak having been to Aleppo 4 times, and this is the will of people in Aleppo. So on that note, I'd just like to talk about briefly, I've been to Syria 6 times since 2014, 2 of which were with international delegations, and 4 times were independently on a visa I applied for, paid for, and waited for. My trips have been self-funded or fundraised, and I've gone at my own risk and been able to travel freely in the country to areas I wish to travel to. I've been many times to Homs, to Maloula, to Latakia, Tartus, Siaf, Sweda, and again Aleppo 4 times. And I mention these because I think it's important people realize I have, wherever I've gone, I've spoken in Arabic to the people I'm speaking with. What Donna, what Sarah have said, that the people support their army and government is absolutely true. Whatever you hear in the corporate media is the complete opposite. And on that note, what you hear in the corporate media, and I will name them, BBC, Guardian, New York Times, etc., on Aleppo is also opposite of reality. Aleppo since 2012 has been inhabited by different terrorist factions, among them al-Nusra, among them the so-called Free Syrian Army, which has committed the same heinous acts of terrorism as al-Nusra, as ISIS, as Ahrar al-Sham, as Nur al-Din al-Zinki, which beheaded a 12-year-old Palestinian child, and somehow is still deemed moderate. Since 2012, these areas of Aleppo, which have now recently been freed, their occupation by these terrorist factions has meant the greater Aleppo, the 1.5 million plus population of greater Aleppo, have suffered sieges denying them food and medicine. They've suffered for years a want of electricity and water, and they've suffered daily bombardment by these terrorists of mortars, of gas canister bombs, which are improvised and made locally, of water heater bombs, which are even more powerful and can level floors of entire buildings, of conventional weapons like Grad rockets supplied by the West, and et cetera. As I said, they've suffered these attacks on a daily basis, and even now, because there are still Western-backed terrorists in pockets of Aleppo, there are still mortars and gas canister bombs raining down, and people are still dying in Aleppo. This is another reason why the liberation and securing of these areas is imperative, because that will actually bring peace to Aleppo. Now, my colleagues here mentioned the nature of unity in Syria and the fact that Syrians are see themselves first as Syrian before any sect. This is an important point because our media and the Gulf media has made Syria out to be sectarian, which is something the Syrians themselves have denied. But it's a tool to make people confused. It's a tool to make people believe that it's Sunnis against Bashar al-Assad, when in fact, bear in mind that Aleppo is overwhelmingly Sunni and is with the government and is with the army and is suffering from the terrorists who declare that they are liberating the city in Syria. Other points about Aleppo are hospitals in Aleppo have been attacked. I'm sure you've heard in the media that hospitals have been attacked. Well, this media is referring to the pockets of Aleppo that were occupied by terrorists. And they have manufactured stories, and I can give you a precise account. In April of this year, there was a hospital called the Al-Quds Hospital, which in a concerted effort, all media said was attacked and targeted and badly damaged by either the Syrians or the Russians. In fact, the Russians had satellite imagery showing that this hospital was in the same shape that it was in October 2015. No difference. Therefore, it was not attacked. Months later, The Guardian, which is a prominent British newspaper, actually said the Al-Quds hospital that it had alleged months prior to be attacked and destroyed was treating victims of so-called chemical weapons attacks. So even the media that is lying is inconsistent in their lies. But there have been hospitals attacked. I went to the Al-Dabit hospital, which is in Aleppo City. It's a maternity hospital. It was attacked on May 3rd, and three women were killed. You would think this would be something raised at the UN or by so-called human rights groups, but it was not. In December 2013, the Kindi Hospital was attacked and destroyed. It was the largest and best cancer treatment hospital in the Middle East. It was destroyed by al-Nusra terrorist truck bombings. And in fact, in recent media reports on Aleppo, again alleging Syrian or Russian strikes on hospitals, Fox News actually had the audacity to use a photo of Al-Kindi Hospital and allege that this is in eastern areas of Aleppo and that this hospital had been attacked by Syrian or Russian strikes. This goes to show how much the media has been lying from the very beginning about Syria and continues to lie. When I went to Aleppo, I spoke with the Aleppo Medical Association. They comprise 4,160 active and registered doctors. More lies in the media have said the last doctor in Aleppo, the last pediatrician in Aleppo. Of these over 4,000 doctors, 800 of them are specialists. So you can see that when the media talks about Aleppo, it's talking about areas that were occupied by terrorists. And it's completely negating the suffering and the will of the Syrian people in Greater Aleppo. When I was in Aleppo in July, I got a taste of some of the bombings by these terrorist factions. There was an explosion about half a kilometer away at Hattat Baghdad, and I don't know how many people were killed that day, but it was close enough that it was a massive plume of smoke. About 5 minutes later, an explosive bullet fired from an area occupied by terrorists landed about 15 meters away from where I was. If it had hit parked cars, I wouldn't be here speaking. A day later, a good friend of mine, his mother, was killed by one such explosive bullet. So this is just a small taste of what people are suffering on a daily basis. In November, when I was there with a delegation of Western journalists, including from the New York Times, LA Times, BBC, etc., on November 3rd, there were a series of attacks throughout the day with Grad missiles, explosive vehicles, and other explosive bullets and snipings. By the end of the day, 18 people, civilians, were murdered and over 200 were injured, including critically. We were at the Al-Razi Hospital, which is one of the main hospitals, and we saw the maimed people pour in. And this was just one day of many of endless days in Aleppo. On November 4th, we were at the Castello Road Humanitarian Crossing. This was a day that was meant to allow the people in eastern areas of Aleppo that were inhabited by terrorists to evacuate. And this was not the first time. On prior occasions, the Syrians and the Russians had opened 8 humanitarian corridors to enable people to leave. These were attacked by terrorist factions heavily. Even that day on November 4th, the Castello Road crossing was attacked twice with mortar shelling when we were there and 5 times afterwards. Clearly, there has been political will and intent by the Syrian government and its Russian allies to enable civilians to leave, to minimize any sort of loss of human life. Clearly, the terrorists that declare themselves liberators of Syria do not want people to leave. They've been holding civilians hostage. And if you're following reports that are not BBC and that are not New York Times, you will see countless testimonies of civilians, of the 100,000 civilians who've been liberated the last week, saying, thank God for the Syrian Arab army that liberated us. And the terrorists were hoarding food. They were preventing us from having food. This is all documented. Also documented are that areas in these areas occupied by terrorists, including a school, were housing chemicals used to make chemical weapons. And you could see also the gas canisters that were used to make explosive gas canister bombs. In fact, even when I was in Leir Amun, we saw a factory in one of the buildings that was used to make gas canister bombs. In Leir Amun, we also saw evidence of the so-called Free Syrian Army that some people say doesn't exist anymore. The 16th Brigades was active there. They had a cell underground, three stories below, that was perfectly intact in spite of aerial bombings above ground. And I make this point because people talk about the destruction in Aleppo as if the physical destruction matters. It's the people that the Syrian government and the Syrian people care about. And the destruction in areas occupied by terrorists occurs because the terrorists are bunkering below ground, come up above ground, fire their bombs on civilian populations, and go back below ground. So I just want to address a few other myths. Some of the myths that have been about Aleppo and Syria in general have been that the Syrian government and army are starving the population. Again, I refer to testimonies of people, even people I met with in November. I met with a family of displaced people from Al-Halaq, which is north of Bustan al-Pasha, which was an area, both areas occupied by terrorists. At that time, when I met them on November 10th, he told me that they had fled along with about 40 others on about 20 days prior, and that they had tried twice prior to flee, but they were prevented violently so from doing so by the terrorists that inhabited those areas. This is the case. These are the testimonies coming out of Aleppo now. People saying, we tried to flee, they wouldn't let us, they shot at us. There are also videos showing people who did manage to flee coming under fire and the Syrian army actually protecting them, acting as human shields. So that's to say that what we've been hearing in the corporate media is not depicting an accurate image of what's happening in Aleppo. The corporate media is saying that the Syrian army is attacking people, and until today, the corporate media is maintaining this, even though the exact opposite is true. I would ask you to follow the voices of people in Syria who, like my colleagues here said, they want you to speak the truth. They're tired of lies. They're very well aware of the lies that our media is purporting and that our human rights groups are purporting. They want an end to the violence. They don't want this war to continue. They didn't ask for this war. But as my colleagues stressed, Syria is a sovereign nation. It has the right to fight against terrorism. And we know that 101 of 193 UN member states have sent terrorists to Syria to slaughter and destroy. So Syria is fighting a war against terrorism. It's winning in Aleppo. And hopefully either the terrorists will accept a deal to be transported out of Aleppo. Hopefully they will participate in the Musalaha, the reconciliation, will lay down their arms, will take the amnesty offered to them by the government, and which has been taken by thousands of former militants. And hopefully, above all, the U.S. will stop supporting terrorism and stop funding terrorism. And hopefully this new bill will take fire, will be supported, and actually it will be impossible to fund and armed mercenaries from FSA, Ahrar al-Sham, Nur al-Din al-Zinki, and all the colors in between, because they're all the same terrorists.
That was just part of it. On tomorrow evening's Progressive Commentary Hour, a special report by other journalists who are going to tell you the truth about the White Helmets, how they're actually a terrorist organization from their research, and also why. Why has the media, including programs on Pacifica, supported the attacks in Syria? We're going to go back to the beginning. We're going to give you a history of Syria. We're going to show you how this began, who was really behind it, the role the CIA played in it, the role that the NGOs played in it, and why the media has been consistent in accepting without question the provocations of lies from the CIA and other media outlets. We're going to lay all this out, plus people who have been in Syria telling you the truth about Aleppo and telling the truth about the genocide that has occurred there. You won't hear this anywhere else in the media. And they could. They certainly have the resources to do this, but they're not going to. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to go where the stories are that are important, and we're going to tell you the truth no matter who it may challenge or offend. I want to thank you all for listening, and remember, tonight, 7 p.m., I'm going to have a special webinar. First, a showing of a documentary you haven't seen on overcoming depression and anxiety, then a whole webinar on dealing with loneliness, not just for this holiday season, but for anything in your life that deals with loneliness. And you'll have a chance to email me, and I'll have a chance, I'll be talking on the mic, and it'll be a fun thing. You can go to GaryKnoll.com or PRN.FM to sign up. Have a nice day, everyone. Sweet.